Here we go. So, this is fun. Yeah, and I'm going to try to just relax about it because, well, you know, this is a lesbian history project. And the reason it's come about even is because Meryl suggested that so little of Southern lesbian history has been documented. So as you're willing and I am willing, we'll share our story of our Miami lesbian dyke experience. How you landed there and what year?
You came. October of 1975.
October of 75.
Of 75.
And how it drew you there in the first place besides work, finding lesbian community? How did you even go about that? First of all, you were a New York dyke, so you were going to search for lesbians naturally because...
Absolutely, because I cannot live without lesbian family around me.
Were you in a relationship at the time?
No.
And how involved were you in lesbian, what they call lesbian feminist politics of the time?
Very involved. I was leaving New York City where I was still working on the lesbian switchboard and in the women's center, and I was very involved in the women's community in New York. And when I got down here, within a week, I needed to find some lesbians somewhere.
What was the first step you took them?
I called the National Organization for Women. I called NOW, and I asked them if they had any lesbians within their local organization, and if they knew of any lesbians, or bars, or bookstores, or anywhere where I might find a lesbian.
Was NOW pretty forthcoming with
all that? Oh, they were very good. Mm-hmm. They told me right away about the Lesbian Task Force and Marianne and Louise, and I asked them if they had their phone number.
So they mentioned their names right away.
Oh, yes, definitely. And they said, and there are other lesbians involved, a huge group of lesbians involved with the Lesbian Task Force, and to call Marianne and Louise. So I remember it was a Saturday night, and it was probably around 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And I called up and Marianne got on the phone and I said, "Hi, I'm a New York dyke and I just moved down here and I'm looking for lesbians. I called NOW and they gave me your phone number. Are you the dykes I'm looking for?" And she said, "We are." And they invited me over that night, and I drove over there and met them and had a good time with them. And they told me about other dykes and invited me to a meeting of a gay task force. It was a mixed task force.
Was it through NOW too?
No.
Okay.
And I went with them and I met Holly Holcomb. And
so you didn't meet them through the NOW lesbian chapter of NOW lesbian. You met them through a gay...
No, I met Marianne and Louise through
the
NOW.
But when you went to this meeting, you're meeting other lesbians, but you're meeting them at a gay task force meeting.
Yes.
Where was that at?
Someplace downtown. It was near Holly's apartment, okay, which I think she lives somewhere around Temple Israel, off of Biscayne or Northeast 2nd and 19th.
What was their reason for existing? What was their did they have a political action or anything that they were doing at the time? What did you get out of going to the meeting?
Well, I got out of the fact that I am not used to being around gay men, and and I still don't like it. And that I could see that they wanted to take over the conversation and that the dykes weren't letting them. But I didn't really get much out of it. I wasn't real interested in working with them. But I did meet Holly and I met, it's hard to remember who I met where, you know.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
But I met...
Did you go back?
Ingrid Hunter,
yeah.
And I met...
Now, didn't all these...
Sybil Adams.
These lesbians you're talking, didn't they have, like, weren't they in positions of... Because the task force of lesbian task force of NOW had, like, chairs or treasuries or secretaries or whatever those things are. Wasn't Ingrid or Marianne Louise part of that?
Well, they claimed that there was no leader.
Okay.
I remember specifically...
Now, that's specifically at the Lesbian Task Force of now.
Yes.
No leader.
No leader. Although Marianne and Louise really were the leaders, but they didn't want to say they were the leaders.
You felt they were the leaders?
Oh, absolutely.
So how did you get from... was that the only time you went to the gay?
Yeah, that was the only gay meeting I went to. I wound up working with gay men again when Anita Bryant came in.
Oh, good question. That was late, a little bit later.
A little bit later.
Yeah. I'll note that, though, because that was kind of an amazing time.
Yeah.
So from that meeting with Mary Ann Louise and the social connection that you made with them, what was the next step to you for getting to the Lesbian Task Force? And
they
was
told
that
me
next,
when,
or did you do other
yes.
things in between?
Well, they told me when the next meeting was, and it was shortly after I had met them, and I showed up there, and it was meeting at the Y, and I met, most of my friends there, and after the Y, we would go out and... go have a couple of drinks and go dancing.
Where'd you go then?
To the Nook. This little bar in Coral Gables.
No kidding. Wow. I've heard talk of it. I never been there. I don't think we got there.
And we would go over to the Nook and get a couple of pitchers of beer and dance. And I got to know more people. I got to know Morgana, who was still Morgan. And, it's so hard to remember who was around.
But
when.
But the characters of our going to Miami, it seems to me the highlights that I come up with too. When I think about going there, now you were there quite a bit, like probably the fall before I was there in the spring. But actually, when we got there and I arrived with Joan, we were directed to the Lesbian Task Force in Marianne as well through Martha and Lucy. They gave us Marianne's phone number. But you had already been part of the task force, and were they doing any kind of political action? What was the formation of the task force, purpose? Was there anything that you recollect that you were all organizing for, other than to just bring yourselves together and be a part?
No, we really weren't politically motivated to do anything except to grow more lesbians and be bigger and do more fun things together.
So it was consider socializing as lesbians, coming together as lesbians in community, a political action?
Oh, absolutely. Anything I do as a lesbian is a political statement. But yeah, sure, it was a political action. And just creating those spaces is a political action.
Excellent. Yeah, so yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. 100%.
And we did. We had art shows on the river wall.
So now you're talking about my time, because when I came, after Joan and I arrived, and we arrived into this huge, huge circle of lesbians, and it probably was in the beginning of May of 76. I'm sure you were there, Mary Ann Louise were there, and I didn't sense that anyone was a leader either, except that I sensed that they were organizing for Dyke Pride Week.
Yes.
Can you say more about that? So you were organizing for a special event, and it wasn't Gay Pride.
No. We didn't want to do Gay Pride.
Say more about that. How did that come to be?
Well, I had spoken to them about Lesbian Pride Week in New York, and that we had split off from the gay men completely, and we demanded that we walk first in the parade, too, in the New York Lesbian, and we called it the Lesbian and Gay Pride Parade. And the lesbians marched first because we were tired of being behind the men. And the men really didn't represent who we were. They would get all dressed up in their costumes, is what I call them, their drag queen costumes, and carry on their roller skates with their feathers and boas, and that was not us. We were the dykes. And so we did that. we organized and decided we were not going to march with them. We were going to do our own march, and they followed. And so when it came to Gay Pride time down here, it was the same thing. I mean, Miami really didn't have a Gay Pride parade. Fort Lauderdale did, but there was really not much Gay Pride going on in Miami. And we decided that we were going to have a lesbian pride week of all different kinds of events. And we had a dance. I remember we had a dance. And we had the art show.
And No Man's Band played.
Mm-hmm.
There was an all-women's band called No Man's Band. I remember that dance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your recollection of
it? Yes. Yes. And I remember I organized. I wanted to just be around lesbians all the time. I still do. So I had heard that there was going to be a bluegrass festival on the grounds off of Coral Way at about in the 70s, not the year 70s, but the streets, at a fairground. And so I called up all the dykes that I knew and I said, let's have a picnic at this music bluegrass festival. It's free to get in and we'll just make our own. And I made a big flag and I stuck it in the ground and all the dykes knew to come looking for the flag and they did and I've got great pictures.
What did the flag say or what was it colored?
It was lavender and purple and it had double women's symbols all over it in the stars and the stripes. And everyone knew to come there. And there must have been about 25, 35 of us. And we just sat and listened to their music and everybody brought food and just had our own little bluegrass festival there.
I assume that important political action was creating our own space as lesbians. And you were to continue some of this and bring some of your knowledge and wisdom from New York and your spark. Because during that week, I also remember that there was one evening of like music presentations and movement. And I remember Morgana dancing or moving, and Seuss, mm-hmm. who did some kind of, you know, could have been Tai Chi or some kind of movement that was very mellow music-wise and mellow, slow movements. And we all were in an audience kind of sense of watching. There were those are only two names I remember, but there were probably four or five different modalities of movement. And then we were in another room, and I think this was all at the YWCA, and we were in another room, and Joan happened to bring her guitar. Now, I don't know why Joan brought her guitar. I don't know if she sang anything or planned on singing. Do you remember her singing anything or playing her guitar?
No, I remember I was playing it.
You borrowed her guitar, and you went on with song after song after song. And everybody was glued to the fact that, I mean, except for Joan, who was going, wow, that woman's just taking a long time with my guitar. But she didn't take it away. You just kept going and you had song after song and lesbian songs. You had carried songs in your pocket from, and some of them, did you remember if you sang any of yours at that time? I know you're singing Friends and Alex's.
Yes, I was.
Do you remember what other music you were singing?
I might have been singing a couple of mine.
I don't remember anyone else doing that night other than you. There might have been, but you were the person that I remember being the star attraction, so to speak.
I'm trying to think if I remember anyone else playing.
I know there was an opportunity because it wasn't like Mindy. And how would you call, did you use your last name, or were you already Mindy Dyke at the time?
I was already Mindy Dyke.
Yeah. So, as far as you recall, you were the only one, and as far as I recall, you were the only one who did any music sharing at that gathering. Did you know if any others knew those songs and sang along? I mean,
no, nobody knew them.
So musically speaking, did you think Miami had not gotten on the wagon of women's or lesbian music at the time?
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I didn't, even in the conversations amongst the lesbians, I didn't really hear them speaking about women's music. I didn't hear like Marianne and Louise talking about women's music. No one had really brought it up until I did. I mean, they may have, but I don't remember that.
But not to your awareness, because when you sang some of the songs, and you knew about Olivia and everything.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
And did you know that Joan was distributing Olivia records in Miami when she arrived?
No, I
didn't. Yeah, Joan and I were, she was the distributor, I was her helper, so to speak, in San Diego. She got involved with Olivia. So when she came to Miami, she continued to do Olivia records. Now, we had a few of them. We had Kay Gardner, and you knew of Kay Gardner from?
New York.
New York. And you knew of Alex from the same place.
Right.
And you knew of Olivia.
And I knew of
Lucy. Chris Williamson, Meg Christian at the time.
And Lucy and Martha, because they were on that same album from the New York Women. And I was there when they were recording that.
So you were there when Martha and Lucy arrived at the Miami Lesbian Task Force, too. Were you there then before they came back to Miami?
I believe so.
I'm thinking you were too.
I believe so. I remember running into them and thinking, wow, that's really far out. You know, I didn't even know that they were down here.
My story goes that I was living in San Diego and Joan and I pulled up to Las Hermanas, the woman's coffee house.
I was there.
Not when we were there.
No. But I have pictures of me there with Meg Christian.
Really?
At Las Hermanas.
But that was much years later.
That was
80s then, somewhere in the 80s.
No. In the 70s.
No kidding.
I was absolutely there in the 70s. It was the first year that I went to Michigan. It must have been
78 or 79. Yeah. 77.
Maybe 77.
Well, 1975, in the fall, there was a music festival in San Diego. Hardly anybody knows about. Holly Neer wrote about it. But we also had a very close access to L.A. And we went to meet Ginny Burson, and Joan decided to distribute Olivia records. And so we were doing it all over San Diego. Well, she came to Miami, and we agree with you that no one that we connected with in Miami, at the time at least, knew of Olivia records, knew of the Kay Gardner. We brought Alex Dopkins, and we would play it loud. Joan would play it loud at Joyce's house when we started living at Joyce's house, and she'd just blast all over Alex Dopkins' record. And she had the one where she changed the cover, so it was probably the first album or something, but it wasn't the one that she had to change the cover because some folks didn't like the Dykes on the cover or something.
Yeah, Living with Women.
Living with Women, yeah. Or is it Living with Lesbians? Did she do Living with Women or Living with Lesbians at the time? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it was Living with Women. Yeah. Or Lavender Jane Loves Women.
Lavender Jane Loves Women.
That's it.
Yes.
That was it. We found it through Ms. Magazine in San Diego. We were living there. And we ordered it right away.
Yeah, I knew Alex before the album came out.
Was she out already then, too?
Oh, yeah.
And how did you meet her?
At...
just to backtrack here.
There was a lesbian group that was a spin-off of the Gay Activist Alliance. And it was like the lesbian committee of the Gay Activist Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we were not satisfied with being, you know, behind the boys. So we split off from them and we became LFL, Lesbian Feminist Liberation. And we met in the same place that the boys met, which was at 99 Worcester Street in Soho. It was called the Firehouse because it was an old firehouse. And LFL met there, and I met Alex through that, and then I started working on the Lesbian Switchboard, and I would publicize all of her concerts. Anytime anybody called, we had a huge calendar on the wall, and we would tell them what was going on for lesbians in New York City. And so I became good friends with her because I was publicizing her concerts.
And did you know Martha and Lucy back then, or just because of the album?
No, I knew them because they used to be there all the time.
Well, they were there all the time too.
Yeah, and all the women who sang on that first album of the lesbian collective.
Yes.
Were there all the time. They sang all the time.
So when you went to Miami, did you meet any of these lesbian performers, or did you have that, or you were just inspired by them then because you brought music to Miami?
Right, but I knew them all.
Yeah.
I knew them all because we met every Sunday.
So you were probably one of the largest influences in bringing live lesbian music to Miami.
Oh, absolutely. Or recorded. Because they didn't know about the recordings either.
So was that something that you got an opportunity to share in lesbian gatherings?
Absolutely.
You brought records. Who did you bring?
I brought whatever was out at the time. I had the Chicago and Women's and New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band album was already out. Alex's album was already out. The Changer and the Change, Chris Williamson, was already out. Meg Christian, I Know You Know, was already out. And the New York group of women's collective.
So you brought
was
all this music
out.
To lesbians in Miami.
Oh, yeah. And then Fran's music and poetry, I brought her books down.
Yeah, I remember getting a book from you. Yeah. They Shall Know Me by My Teeth, I think it was called. Was that it?
Her first book was Dyke Jacket.
Dyke Jacket, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that was her second book. Her first book
wasn't
was...
Wasn't it They Shall Know Me by My Teeth? Wasn't that one of them?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
What was it? I'm thinking of The Gal in California. Okay. Friends. Anyway, so you brought some of this art.
Yes.
The culture of lesbian culture. And if anyone doesn't think that that's political and radical, I don't know what is. Now, we're just going to do a pause on track two.
All right.
So when we are getting into the future thoughts here, the future thoughts, did I say the future?
Mm-hmm.
Our future that began in Miami of a different time of our lives. How old were you when you went to Miami anyway? How old were you?
I had just turned 22.
Okay, yeah, September, so you went there and you got the job. Did you apply from New York, by the way?
No, we just came down, me and my two best friends from X-ray school.
Excellent. Yeah.
We live with my parents who were already here.
Okay.
And we found jobs. The problem was in New York, there were no jobs, too many X-ray tech schools let out at the same time, and the New York Times was on strike. So between all of that, we had no jobs, and we had to move out of the dorm that we were living in because we were no longer students there.
Had you been to Miami before?
To visit.
Your parents moved down there.
Right. So we came down on spring break, all of us.
Did you ever discover lesbian culture in that time?
No, not at all.
So now you know you're going to be permanently down in Miami, or you didn't know that yet until you got a job. But
did you
contact lesbian, now before you got your job?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
In other words, did you know you were kind of settled there before you started searching for community? You know what I mean?
Oh, no. As soon as I got here, I started searching for community because I knew that there were jobs because my father was also an X-ray tech, and he used to mail me the Sunday want ads from the Miami Herald, and there wasn't one job or two jobs, there were three columns of jobs.
Wow.
As opposed to no jobs in New York. So when we came down here, we went and applied at different places, and people were, the hospitals were so interested in us because we trained at a very well-known school. We trained at Cornell University in New York. So they knew we had a good education, and so we would apply at one hospital and then go to the next one and tell them that we were offered a position and how much they were paying, and the next place would up the price. Well, we'll pay you 20 cents more an hour, and we'll pay you 40 cents more an hour. So we went from no jobs to hospitals fighting over us. I mean, it was wonderful. So the three of us got jobs in different places, and we did that so that we could meet more people. Now, my two roommates were straight. They certainly knew about me and accepted me and loved me, but they were straight at the time. One of them is still straight, and the other one has been in a lesbian relationship with the same woman for the last 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you live in Miami, too?
She lives in my apartment building.
That's Connie, right?
Connie and Lynn.
Yeah.
Well, Lynn is who I went to school
Lynn
with.
Went to school with.
Connie, I also went to school with, but that's the straight one that's in New York with the twins. And
okay,
we're still all
there
friends.
Two Connies there.
There's two Connies. Connie, Lynn's lover of 35 years, who's also an x-ray tech. And she was the one who was working with Lynn and Patty Jo West. The three of them worked in the same hospital. And my other roommate, Connie, was working with that Connie's lover named Lily. And that's when we had the big party, and everybody showed up, and all the dykes, you know, got to meet each other, and that was another way of meeting lesbians, a whole different group of lesbians. There was a whole different group of lesbians in the medical field who did not participate in lesbian culture.
So lesbian culture, then, so how would you do, what's that line that you would call lesbian culture and not?
Well,
you're dividing
these
it
women,
right now, saying they were not, but
right.
Were they, or,
like Connie
or was
and
it just
Lily,
a way of seeing it differently?
Connie and Lily really didn't have that many friends, and most of them were straight and in the medical field. And yet they were lesbians, they were a couple, they moved to Miami from Michigan together. And they wound up breaking up, and Connie and Lynn got together, and they've been together for 35 years.
So define that, the difference, though, that you're saying, because, so, did you feel that the lesbian task force then of now, that group of lesbians were, what, more political, or how
oh,
would you define?
Oh, absolutely.
And they, what, how would you define that?
Just
the difference.
By feeling comfortable around lesbians, being dykes, being strong Amazons, having read or now heard women's music, being introduced to lesbian literature, NIAID Press.
Really involved with NOW, or was it the task force that drew you?
Oh, it was the task force. I wasn't a NOWI WOWI.
Oh, a NOWI WOWI?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because I didn't feel I had that much in common with straight women, even though I was living with two of them. But that's because we had a different thing in common. We had the x-ray thing in common. We lived together for 2 years in New York in the dorm, and they loved me and accepted me, and so that was different.
So
me.
You figured there was, and you've met a whole group of lesbians that were involved in your field of work as
yeah.
in the hospital system, and you figured this was a less, what was that word you used, less what crowd than the lesbian task force crowd?
They certainly were less aware of any lesbian movement.
You're including feminism in this somehow?
Yeah, they weren't really involved in any kind of women's or gay or lesbian movement.
Oh, any of it then, okay.
Right, the medical crowd that were gay and lesbians certainly knew of each other, certainly acknowledged each other, maybe went to the bars together once in a while, maybe partied with each other, but certainly not in any kind of lesbian, feminist
awareness?
Thought awareness.
Okay.
It was much more of the x-ray connection.
But it's also, but you also created spaces that you were all together, so you were still making connections and community in some ways too, right?
I mean, right.
And is that not, again, not a political action of some sort?
Oh, sure.
But
I tried to intermingle them.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I did. I, you know, having Patty Jo in both places,
oh.
you know, being on both sides, being in the x-ray lesbian side and being in the circle of dykes that I was hanging out with, that opened it up more. My roommates were hanging out with the lesbians because the lesbians would come to the house and hang out. And so, you know, they felt very comfortable with them because they felt very comfortable with me, and they're very open-minded women.
So besides this week of Lesbian Pride, Dyke Pride, and it was called Dyke Pride Week, or mm-hmm. Lesbian Pride Week, whatever it was, and after that, what I recall is that there was a dance once a month,
mm-hmm.
and it was organized by the task force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somewhere in these months, you met certain ones, and you were talking with Sandra Redwood and a story about Sandra Redwood. Was that in these earlier months, or was that later too?
Probably later. I think Sandra Redwood was part of that, but it was...
Yeah, she was part of when I met the task force, yeah.
But I was specifically talking about, we had gone over either to Marianne and Louise's or to Mary Sims' house.
So Marianne and Louise and Mary Sims, as far as I'm aware, they both opened their homes so that if I wanted to go to a music night, I could walk into Marianne and Louise's house and there was a whole slew of lesbians sitting there playing anything from pots and pans to guitars and flutes.
This is true.
Do you have that memory too?
Oh, absolutely.
And did they do that more than one time?
All the time. You never knew who was going to be there.
But they always had their home open to them.
Yes. And Lynn Bluestein too, which was a whole other group of lesbians. That was a little bit later.
Okay.
That was more like in the late 70s or early 80s. But I remember Marianne and Louise being there at Lynn Bluestein's house. And Patty Joe, for sure, being at Blue Street.
Because I think you took me there, and it was before I met Barbara, so it must have been somewhere in 78, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so Morgana moved up to Pagoda, somewhere
mm-hmm.
in there, too.
Right.
And then I remember you coming over to my apartment, and we were singing, and I had an apartment, because that was after I moved away from Joyce's tenting
mm-hmm.
in her yard. And there's a lot of other things probably in here. And Sandra Redwood was someone that I was hanging out with a little bit with Joan. She was showing Joan and I how to harvest coconuts.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Sims was telling us how to pick up cans in the park
mm-hmm.
or bottles to make a little extra money on the side because we were not working at the time.
Right.
And so they both were helping us survive, even down in homesteads. Halise lived there, and there was this beautiful coconut tree out in front of Halise's house, and she said, come on down, help me move some books and records and stuff, and she had records. Now, she had records, and I don't know, did you remember if she was aware of some of the lesbian or women's music that you were?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? And did you know her through the task force?
I believe that she and I met in New York, in upstate New York.
Really?
Around Woodstock. I think
so
we...
Did she come and migrate to Miami too, or...?
Yes.
Oh.
And I just spent time with her right before we came here, going through some of her records.
No way.
Yeah.
So they were old ones too, like the ones that like you knew and so you had.
Yes.
Did you ever know that at the time that you had this in common? When you met?
I think Halise was
right?
there the night that we met you and Joan, and I think Halise played some music on that guitar.
You may be correct, and she might have had her own.
Yes.
She had her own guitar and she had her own songs that she wrote.
Yes.
Oh, and you think she was there? That's very strongly possible.
I'll
check in with her about it, too. I will check in with her about it. Wow.
And I just spent time with her going through those records.
So she had some of the older records, too?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. Your collections were similar.
Yeah.
She's trying to go through stuff, I know now, isn't she?
Yeah.
It's a hard job to go through.
She has Susan's stuff, and she's got
Sherry
Cooper stuff, and she's got her own stuff, and she's considering moving out west
to
Arizona, New Mexico area.
Yeah, she's thinking about that again.
And she's trying to get rid of it because she's got stuff in different rental warehouses. She's got like three different ones. Yeah.
Alrighty, so we're at the task force, and then there was some point in time that this co-group that Joan and I met, Morgan,
Morgan,
Una, Justine, and they were all staying at Joyce's house.
Right.
and they were all from up in the Northeast, but they, and through somehow, and I think Louise Griffin was on one side of the road, Louise Kayson was on another side of the road, mm-hmm. and being in the medical profession, there were several in the medical profession, Ingrid was another one in the medical, and they all seemed like very powerful lesbians in the task force. However, there was a split that happened. Do you remember that? And do you remember there was a split in the lesbian task force?
No.
Yeah. And one of the reasons was that to be in the task force, you now had to become a member of NOW. And some of the lesbians, like the ones I just mentioned, were resisting being members of NOW. And yet some of them already were members of NOW, and they were not resisting at all. They figured, well, we're members of NOW, and we have a lesbian task force. But that nothing like that came up to you, that you knew about.
I don't ever remember that.
Okay.
It might have happened.
It did happen, yeah.
And I think I was probably a member of NOW.
Now did you split from Miami after some point in time and then come back?
I did.
Was that earlier on then? These years perhaps, or no, or later?
I left for less than 1 year at the end of 1978. And in the winter of 78, I was in New York. I moved back to New York. And I moved back to Miami in the fall.
So before this time, when I had my apartment, you came over one time and you asked me, there are two things that I remember adventures with you. Want to go see Donna Summer? Let's smoke a doobie and go on up to see Donna Summer, which was Donna Summer, and all that music was happening, and particularly at Sebastian's.
Right.
And many of us would go to Sebastian's and dance to disco.
Yes.
And disco and Donna Summer were
synonymous.
Hot.
Yes.
And then another time you came and said, there's this place called Pagoda.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you hear about Pagoda? And what was that year? Do you remember that year? You were going to tell me to see, we were going to go up there to see Berkeley Women Music Collective. We were going to see the opening of Pagoda. I believe it was the first time there was any performance. We saw Morgana do belly dancing. You wore balloons. We saw Flash and Pandora. We saw the Berkeley Women Music Collective. Those are the particular highlights that I remember.
I think Flash called me and told me about it.
Flash
because
called
I was very, very good friends with Flash and Pan in New York. And I think Flash called me to tell me about
that. So you stay connected as you both all moved to Florida.
Oh, yeah. We're still all connected.
Yeah, I know that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And especially now with Facebook. I mean, we Facebook each other at least once a week.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Flash and I are connected in,
so it wasn't
in
through,
really special
so
ways.
So it wasn't through Morgana and that whole experience that you knew that she had started or was part of the founding of Pagoda. It was Flash that got you up to Pagoda. And you
I
and
think
me,
so.
You, Deanna, Ramona, and me, the four of us, and
mm-hmm.
I think it wasn't my car. I didn't have none.
No, it was my car.
Was it your car?
Mm-hmm.
We all drove up, stayed in the motel,
mm-hmm.
and had a marvelous experience at this place called Pagoda,
mm-hmm.
the theater, and there was all this music making.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. I still have pictures of that.
I have a couple pictures on the beach. Do you have others than that?
Yeah, I think I have pictures of the Berkeley Women's Music Collective.
Oh, wow.
And I'd heard them in Michigan.
And see, I'd heard them at that... I was talking about that San Diego Music Festival years
mm-hmm.
ago, in that fall of 75. They were there. They were there too, like with many of the other performers. But that was amazing, and it was amazing to see Flash and Pandora. They were just amazing musicians and
mm-hmm.
powerful. Flash mm-hmm. was powerful, powerful singer, and it was just amazing. And you were just delighted to share this,
mm-hmm.
as well as you know hearing the music and everything else, and being at Pagoda. And I think you and I went up several times, or at least one other that I remember.
Oh, I remember going up with Nancy and Barb, and you and me.
When we did our performance at Pagoda.
And right. and being upstairs in that loft
yeah,
and having to climb down the ladder to go to the
yeah.
bathroom, and Barb
oh, yeah.
said, can't we just pee out the window?
Yeah, but you took me there one other time to see Linda Scheer too. Well,
mm-hmm.
I know from Chicago.
Oh yes, who you knew from Chicago?
And you knew Linda Scheer from where?
Michigan.
From Michigan too.
Yes, her lover Trina was a sign language interpreter.
Ah, and the connection there too came.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you kept connection with Pagoda, how? Because I didn't have that connection to know Linda Scheer was going to be there. How did you stay connected to Pagoda? You
probably Morgan.
To Morgan. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so, Michigan, you went up in 78, I know that.
Yeah, my first one, I'm pretty sure, was 70, either 76 or 77. And...
Well, were you there for the first?
I think so. That's why I think it was 76. And I think it was the first. It was on the old land for sure.
So was the 78 one. 78 was on the old land. But yeah, you had been there before.
Yeah.
78. Because you tell a story.
Yeah, I had been to the old land for at least three festivals. Because I remember three different things happening.
Well, there's a story that you tell about a woman who passed away.
About, yeah.
Did she pass away in Miami?
It was my friend's grandmother.
A grandmother. Passed away in Miami?
No, in New Mexico. My friend, who used to live in New York, moved to New Mexico. Her grandmother passed away, and she wanted to bury her on women's space. And so she put her in a blue wooden box on top of her truck and drove her to Michigan. And when I found my friend in Michigan at the festival, she told me that her grandmother had passed. And I remember her telling me stories about her grandmother for years. And she said, "We're going to have a little ceremony, you know, to bury her." And so I thought, you know, she had the ashes or something. And she said, "We're going to meet at this particular spot at midnight, and would you be part of the ceremony?" And I was honored, of course, sure. Well, as I started getting closer and closer, something started smelling worse and worse. And when I got there, I said, "Oh my God, what is that smell?" And she said, "Oh, that's Granny." I said, "What do you mean it's Granny?" I said, "You didn't bring your dead grandmother here, like, in one piece, did you?" She said, "Yeah, on top of the truck." I said, "Oh, Sue. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you can smell it for miles." And we did. We buried our grandmother on
that
land.
Didn't bother you, though, did it? That was the case.
Well, it didn't bother me that we were doing it.
Yes, I
but
mean,
the smell
yeah.
bothered me, but nothing yeah. else bothered me about it.
So, yeah, I mean, you have some amazing stories in your whole life in your Miami. What, are there any highlights in those days of 70s and the 80s?
Oh, absolutely. The day that Sandy McFarlane, the night that Sandy McFarlane had a flat tire on her Volkswagen on 17th Avenue and 69th Street in the heart of Liberty City. And there were at least five cars making a dyke caravan, and none of us had a jack.
Five cars and no jack. Wow.
Five cars, no jack, lots of dykes, lots of spare tires, but no jack. And so we all pulled over, got out of our cars, and held up the back end of the woman's Volkswagen in midair until she changed the tire. Because she had a tire iron, she just didn't have the jack to pump it up with. And we stood there in the middle of the street, and cops were going by just like screeching to look, but didn't stop to help. They just would stop and look and keep going. But that had to be one of the funniest things. That and we decided we were really hot one Sunday, and we wanted to go swimming. So Marianne and Louise knew of this entrance to Miller Lake before Tropical Park was ever built. Miller Lake went from Miller Drive to Bird Road, and there was this man-made lake. And so we all drove over there, parked our cars, took off our clothes, and went jumping into the lake. And there must have been 15 naked dykes in the water when the police showed up. And they're like, you ladies are going to have to get out of that lake. And we're like, we're not getting out until you leave. We'll leave, but we're not coming out of this water until you go. Oh, God, it was so funny. We laughed for hours and days about when we got caught in Miller Lake. And then another time, I don't know what we were looking for. Me and Marianne and Louise were driving on Bird Road, like in around Galloway, 87th Avenue or something. I don't remember what we were out there looking for. But we pulled into this strip mall, and there was a Jamaican restaurant there. That's not where we were going, though. And in the window, there was a sign that said, "We sell Jamaican moon pies." And Louise said to me, "What's a Jamaican moon pie?" And I said, "I don't know, but it was broad daylight." I pulled my pants down and I said, "But this is a Jewish moon pie." And she laughed till the day she died. Even yeah. when she was dying, literally.
Yeah.
I said, "You want to see?
You remember hearing that story again?
You want to see a Jewish moon pie, Louise?"
Oh, you showed her your Jewish moon pie.
I showed her my Aww. Jewish moon pie, and she rests in peace. She did get to see my Jewish moon pie, and I must say that Louise's passing was another event that was so devastating, but yet so incredibly lesbian. There were sometimes in her room 30, 40 lesbians in this hospice nursing center, and she was never alone as she was transitioning. She knew we were there. And Marianne felt like she could go home and get some sleep because she knew Louise wouldn't be alone.
Yeah.
You know, we took turns and shifts. Mary and Armani and myself and another friend of ours, Amal. We were just all there all the time.
Do you recall when Marianne and Louise decided to open something special?
I do.
Yeah?
Yes, I do.
What was the circumstances around that?
It was just about the same time that I was trying to open Bagelgrams.
Oh, really?
And Ellie was opening up a new Zumalton Fritz. So all of us were involved in these new adventures.
Was that before or after Charlotte being involved in the Women's Preservation Society? Do you remember that one?
Yes.
So this was something special came after the Women's Preservation Society.
Yes. Yes. And I went to them to ask them about, do I report this to the taxes, or, you know, how do they do it? What should I do? What about licensing?
This is for your business.
For my business, because they had just started something special. And they were open for lunch, I remember, on Wednesdays and Thursdays or something. And I was taking some classes at Miami-Dade North. And I would leave there and come over and have lunch with them. They would fix me a big old salad. Mm. And they stopped doing that, but they were doing that and takeout orders at that time. So that had to be, I don't even remember, I was working 11 to 7.
Yeah, I think I have that written down somewhere about when they started something.
I know I was working 11 to 7 because I would get off of work and drive up to Miami-Dade and take that class and then stop back there, eat lunch, and go home and go to sleep. But I don't remember where I was working.
How about the bazaars?
Oh, yes, the bazaars. They were fun. We would just set up in the backyard of something special, tables and racks, and you could buy anything, exchange anything from sheets to clothes to crafts. I remember Lily doing massages.
Oh, yeah.
Lily was doing
and
massages
massage
in her massage chair. Oh, they were fun. They were fun times.
Yeah, several of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I had that moment of thinking about Charlotte doing this Women Preservation Society, and I forget which, somewhere near Bird Road or in that area. Somehow.
Yes, it was off Bird
and
Road.
And Charlotte came
in
into your
70s.
Life, too, and early
yes.
on.
Oh.
I recall you being with Charlotte somewhat, and I don't know how exactly and how in that way.
I met
she
Charlotte.
She came to the task force, too? She was involved then?
Yes, she came to the task force, and we started talking. And then we exchanged phone numbers, and I remember our first sort of date, we had gone bike riding or something, and I hurt my ankle, and she came over the next day to see how I was doing. She came over to my apartment. I was living with Connie and Lynn, and she had biked over and wound up making love that day, and we were together for about 3 years.
Oh.
And that was interesting times, to say the least.
But she had a whole nother perspective too on when she named this group, Women's Preservation Society. What I think I remember about that is that what she wanted to do again was create a community space
right.
for lesbians to have meetings and to do display their arts, their
right.
crafts, and have music making and so on. Do you remember anything else about the Women's Music Preservation Society? That because it didn't last very long. And that was always something that Louise would say. And I don't think it, I don't know if it came before or after the Friday Night Women's Group. I think it came after Friday Night Women's Group, but I'm not
I
sure.
I think it came after the Friday Night Women's Group, but...
But every time Louise would say something like, something ended, something else began. Something else ended, something else. Because the task force itself, I don't recall it lasting very long. And when
right.
the split happened, I remember Mary, we going over to Mary Sims and doing arts, art and crafts, still continuing to do some music making at Louise and Mary Ann's or somewhere else. I think Sandra McFarlane's house was also a place of lesbian gathering.
Yeah, she lived up the hill by the Orange Bowl.
Somewhere in there, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think some of the shifts always took place, and then it was hard to know where to connect with lesbians again, but softball also was a place down
yep.
in the Groovy Grove. They called it the Groovy Grove.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lesbians I met at Woman Rights, Debbie, can't pull up her last name at the moment, but she ended up knowing Patty Jo.
Debbie DeMars?
No, it wasn't Debbie DeMar. I'd have to look her name up, but she was a softball player. Butch as can be, just a young dyke looking softball player. And she thought softball was maybe not as political and as organizing and as radical. However, I tend to think that...
You're not thinking of Diane Shepherd.
No, I'm thinking of a Debbie. I'll get her a picture out later and maybe bring that up to you to see if you know who she was. She couldn't remember you, but she remembered Patty Jo very well. Because Patty Jo organized a lot of the baseball.
Oh, absolutely.
Not only around,
her and Carol Cotton.
Yeah, and not only around the area of Coral Gables, but also up in... when she moved up towards Fort Lauderdale way. So I'm seeing about... almost 60 minutes. We got a little bit more time. So, on this CD.
Mm-hmm.
So, It seems that Patty Jo was also a shaker and a mover.
Oh yeah, but definitely around the softball.
Yeah. And you remember Blackie's.
Oh, absolutely.
But you remember Sebastian's, you remember Topps.
Oh yeah.
The Nook, did that close after a while?
Yeah.
Do you recall?
Mm-hmm.
And was there anything, and what did you remember about Blackie's specifically?
Well,
because you and I were there, we'd go to Blackie's.
She had a couple of different places,
the
too.
First one upstairs.
Right.
And Crawl Away.
Right. Well, she was also involved in the Cherry Grove.
Ah.
She was a bartender there.
So downstairs, that was downstairs.
Yeah, right? On 17th. On 17th Avenue, across from where you used to live.
I know about what you're talking about now, yeah.
And then she opened up the place with the upstairs. And then when that closed, she moved it to off of, it was on Southwest 8th Street, a little bit south of Lejeune.
Yeah, I went to a wedding there. Now, I remember that you performed at Blackie's, the one, the little one upstairs.
And yeah, I remember
and you sang,
that.
You brought your guitar, and again, you were singing songs. And I don't know if it was a special evening. I don't recall how that was put together. But I remember that Blackie was the first bar I knew that played women's lesbian music on the jukebox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Topps wasn't doing it.
No, Topps wasn't doing it. Topps was strictly for, let's go dancing. And
I remember that freaky looking clown light at Topps. That's what I remember most about Topps, was that they had this clown light that was just scary looking. It was really? A lamp.
How about Lou's Back Door?
Oh my God, yes, Lou's Back Door.
And were you around for that time when Louise, there was some incident that happened based on race, and Louise being black, woman, lesbian being up there, and something about that, and I don't recall the details, but I remember several of us saying, well, we weren't going back to Lou's after that. Remember anything about that?
That's starting to sound familiar because I remember not going there anymore.
Yeah, we all some of us stopped going there because of some
reason. And that would certainly not surprise me because racism really wasn't tolerated by any of us.
Do you remember any other incidences about that with lesbians specifically that occurred that you are aware of?
In Miami?
Uh-huh. Around our lesbians that we knew?
Huh.
I mean, you remember Mary Sims getting arrested?
No.
She was driving down the road with Judy?
No.
She had an arrest happen to her. And Louise got in jail for carrying a pocket knife.
Yeah, I remember Louise. Yes, I remember that.
What do you remember about that?
Oh, gee.
But you remember it happening, don't you?
Yeah,
the detail,
I do.
The details are kind of
But I don't remember Mary Sims and Judy getting into
They got
something.
I don't know if it was just Mary or Judy went to jail too. I'm not sure.
Well, I remember Judy going to jail, but it wasn't for
that. Yeah,
for
yeah.
That.
I heard about that later on.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else could come to your mind? And if you want to just let this rest. There's a lot here, and we can elaborate and share as we go along. As I kind of put this together, some other things might come up, and you say, hey, or add this, or whatever, you know, or call me and say, hey, this is...
I'm trying to think if there's any...
highlights that brought you into a sense of politics and political connection that you felt were...
Well, certainly...
Building your self-esteem as a lesbian.
Certainly... Anita Bryant.
Ah, say more about
Anita,
that. I don't
Anita
know anything
Bryant
about
cannot be left out of
Tell
this
me, what,
time.
Tell me, what time period was that? 80s, wasn't it?
No. It was in 78, I think.
Okay. That would make sense.
And that was when we were trying to get the legislation passed in Dade County to... What did we call it? It'll come to me.
Yeah.
But
how'd you get involved?
Charlotte and I were still together.
Okay.
And a lot of the lesbians within the task force, Skevy.
Scabby. Oh,
and
wow.
Mary Beth.
Yeah.
Etta Cimino.
Etta. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Charlotte, myself, Marianne, Louise. A bunch of us worked on the phone banks, calling up registered Democrats and asking, explaining the referendum.
But how did you
referendum.
Get involved in these phone banks? How is that? How did that all get formed? Do you have any thoughts knowing about that? Or how you just heard about it and you went over?
Yeah, Jack Campbell, who was the owner of the Gay Man's Baths, was also running for city council.
Okay.
And he organized a lot of it. And he had a lot of the money.
Okay.
And paid for a lot of the phone banks that were set up. Mostly, there was a gay men's, like, hotel on Biscayne Boulevard and in the 50s. I think it was 5500 Biscayne or something like that. And that's where one of the phone banks was, and we would go over there at night and call registered Democrats and explain the referendum to them, because if you voted no, you were voting yes, and if you were voting against the gays, you voted no. It was a horrible referendum. But I remember Charlotte and I following a car that was putting up posters against the gay people. And we were like one block behind them. And as they would put it up, we would pull it down. And every single one that they put up, we pulled down until they figured it out. And then they started chasing us. Oh, we were really scared that night that we were going to get killed. Mm-mm-mm. Because it took them a long time to figure it out, and then when they did, they figured out that everything that they had just done for the last 3 hours was in the back of our car. But you'd be sitting in a traffic jam, like at 5 o'clock going home from work, which was bumper to bumper, and you could be on 836 for an hour trying to get home from work. And the person in front of you would be the person who was in front of you for an hour with a bumper sticker that would say, "Kill a queer for Christ," or "The only good gay is a dead gay." And you'd be sitting behind them for a fucking hour. It was insane. Wow. And that was a very hot political time. Yeah. That was when I was working at Jackson for sure. Positively. And remember, we were talking yesterday, I think, about, this morning, you were resting, and Beth and Robin and I were talking about having little powwows with people at work when you just needed that extra bit of support from people who understood you. Robin was saying that there was a Jewish group of women that would powwow with each other when they needed that support from each other. Well, I was working at Jackson, and all of the gay x-ray techs would go into this little tiny bathroom, and we would have like a gay hug, and then we would come out and go and do more work, and then, somebody else would say, "Okay, time for the gays to hit the bathroom again," and we'd all go in and hug each other, the faggots and the dykes. It didn't matter. We just would go in and hug each other and come out.
Wow.
And
so needed, huh?
The night, yeah, because the political climate everywhere, it was everywhere. The doctors were talking about it. The patients were talking about it. Everybody, it was all over the news. It was really a very hot climate in New York.
In Miami
about that. And the night of the vote, I was at the Fontainebleau Hotel waiting for the vote to come in. And I was there by myself. I was sitting at a table, and on the table was a platter of olives and pickles and and those kind of things. And this reporter came up to me and he stuck his microphone in my face and he said, "And what do you think about this?" And I grabbed a pickle and I shoved it in his face and said, "And what do you think about this?" And the cameraman got it. And the next day I remember going to work and one of the radiologists, one of the doctors, came up to me, and she's still a friend of mine. I just spent time with her of these holidays with her. And she was married to a cardiologist who also worked at Jackson. And she said, "Mindy, you know what happened last night? I was sound asleep and my husband woke me up. He said, 'Margie, Margie, look at the TV.' And I opened my eyes and there you were on television sticking a pickle in some man's face. And my husband said, 'Margie, isn't that Mindy?' And there you were. Why were you on TV sticking a pickle in some man's face?" And I said, "Well, Dr. Sanders, if they fire me, you know why." And I told her, you know, I was there against Anita Bryan. And she said, "Oh, Mindy, they love you too much here. They're not going to fire you over anything." Wow. And to this day, we are still friends. I worked with her somewhere else after that, many years after that, and we're still very, very dear friends.
So how did you feel then when the vote came out?
Oh, I was devastated.
Yeah.
I was just devastated. I felt like, how can these people buy this crock of crap?
Yeah.
From, you know, and who the fuck was Anita Bryant? And we boycotted, womancotted Florida orange juice.
Oh, yes.
She lost her job.
Oh, yes.
She lost the endorsement.
Yes.
And you couldn't get orange juice in a gay bar in Miami for years.
Yeah, yeah.
For years. Forget about ordering a screwdriver or any drink that contained orange juice. And there were signs everywhere in every gay bar, men's bars, women's bars, bike bars, dyke bars. It didn't matter. With orange and the no
extra,
sign.
The sign through it, yeah.
The no, international no,
no sign,
sign.
Yeah.
No oranges. And a lot of people did not know that Florence Henderson was almost as much involved with that as Anita Bryant, but her name was not out there. And she was in that television show, The Brady Bunch, and her co-actor, her husband in that show was actually gay and wound up dying of AIDS. And she basically had this change of heart and started, you know, trying to support AIDS movements and stuff. But that was way after she was right alongside Anita Bryan trying to kick us into the ground. So I've never been a Florence Henderson fan either.
I don't remember that, because Brady Bunch was a little after me.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah, you can't talk about Miami and any kind.